take some notes here, because you would have asked your pref equity guy, do you have the ability to cure? How much money are we in the capital stack? Because I don't want to be the 20% at pref and only 5% at common, because I only have a 5% safety net of capital. I want to be the 5% of pref and the 20% of common, so I got that 20% behind me. And just to dumb it down to the lowest number.
What's going on, everybody? This is the Passive Wealth Strategy Show. Thank you for joining us today. As always, I am your host, Taylor Lote. I'm a real estate investor, and I focus on multifamily and self-storage investing. This is the show that will teach you how to build wealth with real estate without buying yourself another job. Today, we're joined by Darren Davis. He's a very experienced real estate investor who has successfully executed transactions approaching $1 billion through his privately held real estate investment firms. His business is Club Capital, and today he's focusing on pref equity positions in commercial real estate investments. We're going to dig into that topic today of pref equity or preferred equity, which is not a new phenomenon, but has grown in popularity, if you will, in the market as a result of increases in interest rates and changes in the commercial real estate and development spaces. A lot to talk about today. Darren, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you fill it out a little bit more and tell us about what your company's doing these days?
Sure. Taylor, thanks for having me. I'm pretty excited to be here because I think the timing for investors looking for passive income is pretty exciting. It really is. There's some really nice things happening out there. But my company's background and my background, we've primarily been in the development space here in Texas primarily. We did common equity or LP equity, and sometimes we acted as the GP as well. But we had a bull run from 2009 to 2020, 2021 for sure. I think in 22, everything changed. Interest rates started ticking up, leverage started going down, valuations started coming down. And the next thing we know, the last year and a half, what we were doing as a company on the development side as the equity source pretty much dried up. We had year over year for the fourth quarter of last year, a 72% decline in new construction starts here in the Austin MSA where I'm located. That's significant. Now, granted, it was super high, but still it is really low now. But what that's done is it's opened up an opportunity for investors to look at a different source of fund. And that's what you talked about is preferred equity. And we think the preferred equity is probably going to have anywhere from a 3 to 5 year life cycle until I think things start normalizing with interest rates and valuations and leverage. But it's really a good opportunity for investors if they want to capitalize on it. It would be perceived as a little safer, a little more secure, a defined time frame. And then you actually know what you're getting. You don't get the big upsides potentially of what common equity can, but you sure do get a shortened time frame and a contracted return from that sponsor.
Great. So let's lay some of the groundwork, if you will, for what is pref equity in these types of deals that you're doing? What is the kind of situation that maybe a developer would find themselves in when they would need to use pref equity and like kind of why it's gotten so popular.
That's true. And it's happening as we're speaking right now. So let's back up just about 3 years ago. 3 years ago, three and a half, there were a lot of construction loans that were going out at 3.5%, 4% of variable. Okay. And when developers took on that note for, let's say, $40 million at 3%, they didn't pencil an 8.5% rate at the back end of that loan that they've drawn down on. Okay. At the beginning of that loan, they draw down $1 million, and then it goes to $5 million, then to $15 million. But when you're at the end of that $40 million construction loan and you're running 8.5%, you did not plan for that interest reserve at all. Okay. What else has happened is the valuations have started coming down. When a property trades, it was valued at maybe $80 million under the underwriting of the bank 3 years ago. That's now at $65 million. That lowers your loan to value too. And banks now start looking at this and going, wait a second. We used to loan out 75% of the loan to cost. Well, now we're going to loan out 55% of the loan to cost. So you get another huge gap. So you have this like, just like perfect storm where you have fluctuating interest rates and you didn't have the interest reserve. The valuations have come down. The loan proceeds have come down. So now let's say my loan is maturing and I'm at the end of it and I don't have the ability to pay off that note because people cannot get the debt to purchase that because of everything I just said. So what happens is they're sitting here going, what do I do? I don't want to hand in the keys and my investors lose their money and I make no profit because we have a nice development here. So what they're looking for is with full rescue capital. Preferred equity is rescue capital. How can I find someone to help me fill this gap for a period of time until interest rates start going lower, valuations start coming up, rents start trending up because they're flat now as well for the most part, maybe 1-2% growth. And that perfect storm of everything that was hurting us is now starting to, I think, put itself behind us, but it's not going to be fully behind us for another 2 or 3 years. And what's happening here is you have, and you and I both know, we track this in the multifamily world or the debt world, there's over $3 trillion of loans coming due between 2024 and 2028. When those loans start coming due, a majority of those are going to need some help. And we talked about this too, that you're used to going to refi your house and refi a property and take cash out. Nobody's taking cash out right now. It's a cash in refi. So that's where this preferred equity or cash calls or additional capital is needed. And at the end of the day, what's happening here is the developers are willing to pay a premium. And they're willing to say, okay, if I have my senior debt here and my common debt above, that's all the equity raised, we're going to put this piece of pref equity in between and give it a priority distribution to the common equity. So for the preferred equity, you'll have the senior debt, you'll have the preferred debt, which has priority over the common. So it's a really safe place to be for investors because they get paid before the common equity gets paid and before the sponsor takes their promote at the very end for performance. So it puts them in a really nice position. And most of the preferred equity deals from coast to coast that you'll see are going to pay the investors 10, 11, 12% annualized. And you'll see, and a lot of those, you'll see, you know, 30 to 50 to 70% of that being paid on a quarterly basis of that interest return because the sponsors are having to prepay that interest to the pref equity to make sure that money is escrowed and can't start making those interest payments.
So the developers have found themselves in pretty tough situations, right? With, like you mentioned, falling values and then falling loan to cost ratios from banks and this perfect storm of interest rates being much higher than any of them have projected. So that puts them in the situation where they have basically two choices. They can bring in a pref equity partner to give them a bridge down the road to get to maybe a falling interest rate environment or a recovery situation, or they could roll the dice with the bank and potentially hand the keys back and everybody lose all their money. And that's not a great choice to have to make, right? It's a rock and a hard place. But from your perspective, being in the pref equity seat, you can still, theoretically or in principle, you could still make a bad investment, right? If the deal is so far gone that pref equity is not going to save it, then it's not going to save it. Sorry, I can't help you. So how do you approach that problem of figuring out whether a pref equity arrangement could help a particular deal or situation? What like questions are you asking or how are you addressing that?
That's really a great question because when we introduced to our investor group, that was one of the top three questions we got every time. Why are we doing this if it's deal struggling? And we say, hang on. So we're not just throwing darts on a wall and say, let's place, like that. We're very focused, okay? Very focused because we are still looking at these assets as if we were going to own it, okay? We underwrite it as if we were going to build it or buy it. We location, quality of the asset, the sponsor, all of that. Because at the end of the day, if we do end up taking that asset back and controlling it, we don't want to take on a giant mess, right? We want to be able to take an asset on that we want to own, right? So we're not out there just finding something we think we can make 10, 12, 14%. That's not the plan. So our due diligence, our underwriting, demographic, supply, demand, location, just everything, we still treat it just like that asset. Now, I think this is really important to understand. We will not, you know, overcommit any money to the deal that doesn't put enough safety in it for us. And here's the example. You have a loan to cost stack, right? One of our recent deals we did, 75% of the cost was the senior debt, right? The next 5% was our preferred equity, and the next 20% was the common equity. So we have 20% of the cost of that project behind our capital. So that gives me this feeling of, okay, there would have to be a big correction to wipe out not only the 20% and my 5%, but the other thing we do is that we put in our agreements with the senior lenders that we have the ability to cure. And to your listeners, I would say, guys, take some notes here, because you would ask your pref equity guy, do you have the ability to cure? How much money are we in the capital stack? Because I don't want to be the 20% at pref and only 5% at common, because I only have a 5% safety net of capital. I want to be the 5% of pref and the 20% of common. So I got that 20% behind me. And just to dumb it down to the lowest number, the last deal we did, if you looked at the underwriting and the cost for that complex or that investment, the three buckets of capital, the senior debt, the preferred equity, and the common equity, all represented the cost per unit of $250,000 a door. Okay. So that was the cost to build this project. If you look at the pref equity and the senior debt only, and you have wiped out the common equity for whatever reason, something didn't happen in the market, right? Our cost was $187,000 more. So we could, in theory and contractually and legally, we could pick this asset up if it didn't materialize and wipe out 20% of the equity and buy it at $187,000 a door versus $250,000 a door. So I guess to get back to one thing that's real important, why do we do this? What, one, Class A assets, we're in the MSAs of Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, San Antonio, and some in Houston. Class A assets, primarily development that's near the end of construction or the end of lease up, and loans are maturing. So we're not doing things that are not laser focused in some of those key areas that we really know that make projects successful and stuff we'd want to own.
So is there a particular, the number that comes to mind for me is percentage. We're talking so much about percentages, but when you think about the fraction of deals that you see that actually make sense to do, what does that typically, what does that look into work out to? Is it like 1 in 10 or 5 in 10?
I think we're a little unique, but I think the underwriting for a common equity deal, you would probably say I'd look at 10 and find one that I like. Okay. The focus gets so narrowed down in the preferred equity because the sponsor, the assets well under construction, if not close to completion. So those things have all been narrowed down. The money's been spent. Okay. You're not wondering if the budget is on or off because it's down to exactly, hey, we need $5 million to finish this deal, to pay the interest, get it leased up, get through the contract, do everything we need to do. And that's where we step in. So when somebody presents you a pref equity deal, you're probably 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 will fit your parameters. And I would even go outside of our normal territories for a pref equity deal. So right now for us, it's Texas and Florida. But if I see something that could be in Oregon, okay, and it's 99% complete and it's 80% leased, and I get that capital stack right where I want it, where I'm, me and the senior debt are no more than 75, maybe 80%. That's a deal on paper that I'm now working with math and contracts and not working on everything else. When you're talking about everything that could happen from the very beginning of entitlement of land all the way through construction, all that's behind me because it's already done. So it's a little bit easier to underwrite a pref equity deal.
Okay, makes sense. So going back to this idea of being able to cure to if things go wrong, that, you know, I'll be honest with you, that kind of stinks for the original common equity investors is, okay, things go wrong and you get to take the property over. I mean, you know, they were in a rough situation. You were trying to bail them out. So fair is fair. Just to push back a little bit, that kind of stinks for them, doesn't it?
It does. And I have never taken the approach of doing anything but the right thing in my entire life. Okay, do the right thing. There's most of the time, the sponsor will have gone back to the equity and say, hey, we need a capital call. Okay. And if you can't get the right participation, then the option that the sponsor has next is to find secondary finance. And that's typically when they come to us. So it's not like the common equity was not given an opportunity to say, hey, we got to step in here and save this thing. Everybody put their pro rata, but there's just a lot of times that you can't get enough participation in that. And the sponsor doesn't have the extra 3, 4, 5 million, if he even had to pay 50% of it, to put into the project. I don't expect us to take over a project because we're going to do everything we can to do what we did contractually and help that project. But in the event it does happen, and it could, I can't not take care of my investors first because that's what I'm contractually bound to do. And if that means we take over the project, we may even have to bring a little bit more money to the deal. Okay. We may have to, but the first person out, it's just the way it is. It's that whole risk and reward that we all talk about. We're taking a limited amount of reward and we're not taking on as much risk, and we may take over the project. And it is bad for the common equity, but it could happen. I don't think it will in the projects we're looking at, but we're preparing for that just in case. I would rather be prepared and not lose my investors' equity because that's what I got to focus on.
Yeah, no, they were in a distressed situation in the first place and had options secure, and is what it is. So on the kind of locating opportunity side, from your perspective and finding potential developers or folks who are in need or projects that are in need of pref equity, this is one of the things that I was a little bit not concerned about, but was seeing kind of a hole in the pref equity model is that, okay, there can be this big need for pref equity out there, but you still need to bridge the gap between the people who need or the projects who need pref equity and the companies that have the pref equity to provide it, right? You have to put those two together to actually make the deal happen. And it's not like there's an MLS for pref equity folks out there. And that presents a problem on both sides. Both parties have an incentive to come together. But as far as finding those people or putting that market together, if you will, what have you found is a successful way to find those developers who are in need of pref equity?
Well, I may not have the magic answer for you, but when you've been in a location and been doing this as long as I have, the network that we've established just here in Texas, primarily, people know how much we can raise, how fast we can raise, what we like, what sponsors we like. We have a dozen sponsors that we actively raised money for over the last 10, 12 years. So we all know each other. And if we don't, we're only one phone call away from, hey, my friend's a developer, my friend's, I don't have the ability to put 5 to 10 million in this today, but if you need it in 30, I'll give you a great example. A friend of mine needed literally the biggest pref equity check I've ever heard of. Okay. I won't say his name because he needed $30 million. I was going, so-and-so 30. And he goes, I said, I can't do that. I said, I maybe could do 10 or 15. Okay. He said, man, I need 30 and I need it in 90 days. And he goes, do you know anybody? I did. I had met a gentleman through a friend of a friend, and they're a well-known group out of Houston. I connected those guys, and in a matter of 3 days, they had figured out that there was a lot of synergies in their in the needs and wants between them. Now, granted, they didn't do the $30 million because my friend had found another source already. But if that source had not panned out, I am sure that this source, that the introduction that we made, and it's it was just a network. And that's just the network we built up over the last decade plus.
That's awesome. No, that's great. That's the real estate is a very network heavy industry.
Absolutely.
There's not, yeah.
And don't mess around because if you do, the network knows. Hey, you know, it's a small network. Yeah.
News travels fast.
Oh, yeah.
I think when rates really started going up and it started to look like there was going to be distress, there was a lot of conversation or there were a lot of questions about, is this like the lead up to the Great Recession? Anytime you're talking about distress related to debt, people get a little concerned about that. Mm-hmm. What's your perspective on whether this is 05 in the kind of falter, 06 in the days that were really leading up to the Great Recession? Are we?
Good for me that I have the experience to have gone through three recessions, right? So I've got some battle scars. And this one has not brought me the anxiety that the other three did. And I get asked that a lot. Hey, what's your thoughts on this? I think the Fed is far different than it was 15 years ago, 12 years ago. I think the economy is far different in the type of ways we measure the economy, because to me, capital is still relatively inexpensive. I think expectations are a little far-fetched. And I sit back and look at this and I'm going like, this is not, if you look back at 2007, 8, 9, that period lasted 3.5, 4 years, okay? We're not in this period, even two, we're right at two. And we're already starting to see some signs of light, okay? You guys, you and probably half your audience does not remember the savings and loan crisis, all right? Which I wouldn't want, but you've heard about it, okay? I barely remember it. I just know my dad, I was in elementary and middle school, but that was a train wreck, okay? That was 10 years, all right? And 10, 11 years. So if you look at 10 or 11 years, and then you look at the dot-com was this, and you look at some oil crisis in the 70s and 90s, it lasted longer. We're in the 2-year mark, and I think this doesn't go on another two. I think another year, maybe year and a half, that it's going to be a little tough. And I tell people, for us, what I see, I don't see distressed assets. I see discounted assets. There's going to be opportunities, no doubt about it, but it's not going to be a fire sale. It's not going to be a train wreck. It's going to be some really good deals to be had that will position you, or if you're able to take advantage of those deals, will position you for the next decade to do really well. So now to me, now's the time to find the right sponsor, find the right investment, find the right location. And I'd be going big in multifamily primarily. I'd be going big in multifamily for the next 2 or 3 years.
Nice.
And I will, by the way. I'm not just talking, I will.
I believe you. Right now, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor.
Are you looking for a way to easily track your rental property finances? Check out Stessa. Stessa makes managing real estate investments simple. You can easily keep track of the performance, finances, and the paper trail of your rental properties. Our listeners can get started for free and then upgrade at any time to unlock their more advanced tools. And the even better news is that the upgrade is very affordable and will not break your bank. Smart investors know that tracking the numbers, tracking the money, tracking the finances is what really drives your success. Check out Stessa. It'll make your property finances easier. Just go to escapingwallstreet.com, scroll down to the Stessa logo, and get started for free. Now back to the show.
All right, Darren, I've got three questions I ask every guest on the show.
Sure.
Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Number one, what's your number one book recommendation?
I thought about this because, I got 50 of them. Okay. All the back from third grade up to today. Something I've always struggled with is staying focused, just laser focus. All right. And there's a book by Gary Keller here. If you don't know, Keller Williams, he's a guy here out of Austin, and he talks about the one thing, doing one thing well. And if you can stay focused and if you're the best at what you do, you will be successful. I don't care what that one thing is. Focus on it. Stay laser focused. Don't get distracted. I find myself, I go and I go, ooh, squirrel. go, oh, squirrel. And I go, no. Pull it back. And if you look at all the greats, if you look at the Steve Jobs and the Pattons and the Vince Lombardis, man, every single one of them just says, stay focused. You know, find the one thing that you're good at and just go. So, you know, that the one thing, I think everybody should reread that every time they think they're getting distracted. Because if you're multitasking, you're failing. And you can't do 10 things, but you can do one thing really well. The other nine, let them go. Just let them go. So that's my book. Nice. I would say reread The One Thing by Gary Keller.
I'll put that back on my list. Yeah. It's been a little while. Maybe I need to revisit it. Question number two, who or what inspires you?
Yeah, this is going to be another boring answer, but the who's are my children. Okay. No ifs, ands, and buts about it. I literally, if they're proud of me and if they want to hang out with me, that just motivates the hell out of me. And it's just incredible as my kids get a little older and we start talking like adults to each other. I'm just going like, ooh, I'm going to grow this. I'm going to grow it. Keep going. But I can't be their friend. I'm still their parent. So that's one thing. And I think what I love people that execute. When I see young people that have an idea and they go for it and they execute, I'm awed, you know, going, man, you took the chance, you took the risk. I want to be like you. And they may be 30 years old, 25 years old. And it goes, okay, I've got more experience. I've got more wisdom. I can too. So I think just people that just get it done. I love it.
Nice. Question number three, think about Darren at 80 years old. If you could sit down and have a conversation with 80-year-old Darren, what do you think, what advice, feedback do you think 80-year-old Darren would give to Darren of today?
You know what? I love this question because my kids are 18 and 19, and they're hitting this stage of life that I'll talk about. And there's really two things that I would recommend to everybody. The decade, I have a lost decade. I'll give you a personal thing about me. My lost decade was from the age of my 20s, let's say 22 to maybe 34. Okay. I was having so much fun. I was not focusing on anything, building anything other than my ego and my bank account. All right. Those aren't sustainable, period. All right. I would encourage young people to really focus on who and what you want to be early in your life, because what happens in those first 10 years of your life for most everybody will determine what happens the rest of your life. Now, some people, including myself, can make a change and turn that around, but you don't want to be doing this in your 50s and 60s, trying to figure out what to do. Yeah. So that 20 years of that first 10 years, when you come out of your 20s, discipline, stay focused, stay away from all the crap, and just over deliver and under commit and do it day in and day out. And then the other thing that I did that worked out, and I'm so glad I did it, is my wife and I prepared to have passive income later in our lives. And I'll share a personal story with you, but we started this back in 2001, 2002, and we started building the foundation of passive income. We're cruising right along, we're going. All of it would have worked out perfectly, except she got cancer. And you don't know how unprepared you are for life when a loved one is facing an illness like that. And what happened was, where we thought building that 10 years of passive income actually saved us from going bankrupt, because when I had to take care of her and my kids and only work 20, 30, 40% of the time, that 10 years of commitment to passive income actually paid for me not having to do full-time work. And it supported us for the next 8 years. And we're in the hospital every week, staying at home with two young kids, doing what I can. But there was another family that we were had met through this process. She had cancer too, and they were not prepared. And it wiped them out financially, just wiped them out. And it was the saddest thing I've ever seen. But by building that foundation and not using it for what we thought, just kept, I can't even stress enough that we were planning, but it saved us. And granted, she did pass, but me and the kids are doing really good now because we had that foundation. When you need money and you need time and you have a job and that's all you have, things can be a lot different. So that's my advice. Okay. Those two things, prepare. And no matter if you never need it, it's better to have it, not need it, than to not have it when you need it.
Absolutely. Tony Robbins likes to talk about how not just the year, but life and reality comes in seasons. There's spring when we sow, there's summer when we tend our crops, there's fall when we harvest, and then there's winters, which happen, and winters happen in our lives as well. And fortunately, you had prepared to be ready for that winter.
And I'll tell you, as a father, you want your kids to look at you like a hero. That's all they know me. They know me as the dad that stayed home and took care of mom and took care of them. And they look back, they reflect, and they're older now, and they reflect back on it. And you're talking about those proud moments where you go, whew, my kids like me. I did the right thing. Yeah. But those are my two things, and I'll stand down.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that, and thank you for joining us today. If folks want to reach out, get in touch, or learn more about you, where can they track you down?
Boy, I'll give you two things. Darren at clubcap.co, clubcap.co, Darren at Club. Or if you want, my cell number is on the website, and my phone number is 512-567-2600. I answer it all the time. I like what I do.
That's awesome. I've had a great time talking with you. I'm sure if our listeners give you a call, they're going to enjoy that as well. And I want to thank you for joining us today. I want to thank everybody out there for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one.
Thanks, Taylor.
Great. Well, thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one.